chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Come on in for an evening of poems and stories about the American West. A land of legend, of romance, of friendship and courage. A motherlode of remembrance. A true showcase of the Old West with the old cowboy, J.C. Halsey.
Howdy, folks. Come on in. Grab a chair and settle in for another great show. Today's show is going to be a little different because we got a very, very special guest author. Why is this author different? We visit with authors all the time. Well, this author is a little different because he's been doing for years what all of us other authors desire to do. He's been making his living from writing books. Ralph Cotton has been writing and making a living doing that for quite a few years. With 79 titles under his belt, he's still writing every day. He has signed with some of the big-name publishers, and he's going to share a little of that experience with us on today's show. So like I said, settle down, because I know you're going to want to hear this. But before we visit with Ralph, let's listen to some music. This is Brennan Lee, What'll I Do?
It's the first day since you left me. Here I sit all alone, what'll I do? I'm so used to having you around, baby, what'll I do? I keep searching for a reason. You treated me this way, what did I do? Oh, without your sweet love to hold on to, what'll I do?
Now let's visit with Mr. Cotton. We want to welcome to the Wild West Showdown today, author Ralph Cotton. Welcome, Mr. Cotton.
Good morning.
First of all, let me ask you this. Is Ralph Cotton your real name or is it your author name?
No, that's my real name.
Okay, that's a great name for an author.
Yeah, well, I've written under other names, but this seems to be the one that's brought me the most luck.
tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were born, where you grew up, and where you're living now.
Well, presently, I'm in Florida. I have a place on the Gulf, and then I have a small place over on the East Coast. But I'm originally from Kentucky, Grayson County, Kentucky, sort of the backwoods of central Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And spent a big portion of my childhood growing up in Louisville. And then when I was very young, about 15, I pretty much left home and went to work young. Worked on the river boats, construction crews, things like that. So got my good learning from that, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Kentucky's a good place, a good background to draw on for writing, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like it is. It's sort of between everything. It's between the north and the south, so that gives you a little bit of an open attitude about things. It gives you a different perspective. So, yeah, I've always enjoyed the fact that I'm from Kentucky.
Okay. Are you married? Do you have children?
Yes, I'm married, have children, grandchildren, and now two great-great-grandchildren.
Oh, goodness. How about all your children and grandchildren and even great-grandchildren? Any of them want to follow in your footsteps as an author?
I've got a daughter that's a really good writer, but she's working on her degree in psychology, and she's done some screenplay work.
Okay.
But I don't know if she's that serious about it or not. You know, it just, time will tell.
When did you write your first story?
My first story probably in about third or fourth grade.
Oh, goodness.
Non-professional, of course.
Sure.
But, yeah, around that time. And I always wrote short stories, just kind of threw them off there and forgot about them. And I did some writing in school. And because I wasn't a very good student except for the writing, my teacher had the idea that I had copied it from something. And, you know, after I thought about it, that was kind of a backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
That, you know, that she would have thought my writing was good enough that, you know, that it could have been someone else's. So I've thought about it ever since then. It was inspiring in a sense. So
okay.
You take what you can get.
If you don't mind telling us, how much schooling do you have?
Well, my education's not bad, but it's kind of piecemeal. I left school in the 7th or 8th, and I think the first part of the 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, when I went in the military, I got my GED.
Mm-hmm.
And then years after I left the military, when I turned about 23 or 24... I went back. I did a lot of courses through USAFI, which was a veteran benefit. But then I took that to some local colleges in Louisville and did some study there. And it's just been piecemeal all the way through. But it was the kind of education I wanted, I suppose, because it's certainly what I got.
Yeah. Well, I did the same thing. I'm an eighth grade graduate, and then a GED.
There you are.
A GED in the Air Force. What branch of service were you in?
I was in the Army.
In the Army. For how long?
I was on a 3-year, but I got out at 2.5 years. I had an accident, military-related accident, and for a long time it looked like I wasn't going to be able to get much use out of one of my feet.
Okay.
So I took a partial and came on out 6 months early and then got a lot better and don't have any real problem with it now.
You mentioned you wrote your first story in about the third grade. Do you happen to remember that story?
Not really. It was almost an act-out story. We had a couple of kids in our third grade class there. I was more or less reading this little story, and they were acting it out. But it was a Western, of course. I guess, in a way, that would be my first production, too. It was just a fun thing, you know.
What made you decide to write Westerns?
Well, I come from that era, growing up in the 50s, where if you went to movies much or did much of anything, reading or whatever, Westerns were always there. They were kind of like the genre. And for our generation, I think it's sort of where we learn to distinguish the good guys from the bad. A lot of things that I see now that are not Westerns, I see the same format of the old 50s Western in that. And I think it was good for our society. And it's just a natural fit. I've written a lot of other things. I've done ghostwriting and other genres and that, but Westerns is pretty much where I'm coming from.
Okay, how many books have you had published?
I just found out yesterday, 78.
78 books.
Yeah, 78. That's the first time I actually sat down and did a count, so I counted them all out, listed the order they were printed in and published in, and put them all on my Facebook page.
When did you have your first book published?
That would have been in 93. I think it didn't come out until 94.
That was with a big name publisher, is that correct?
I was with St. Martin's Press.
St. Martin's, okay.
They're pretty notable. I think at the time they were one of the top three. Of course, that's changed so much since then. There's only like, I don't know, not very many right now. But at that time, St. Martin's Press, which is Macmillan, be one of the larger ones. And I'm sure probably still is.
When you held that first book that you had published in your hand, how did that make you feel?
It's really hard to describe. It's something that you work towards it. Almost not really, really fully expecting to ever see it happen. So when it does, it's just a whole lot of different feelings at once. You try to kind of control yourself a little bit because right, somebody's going to come in and say, hey, we just made a bad mistake. It's a letter, you know.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, it takes a while to get used to it.
Well, but you got to admit, kind of down deep, it was a good feeling, wasn't it?
Oh, it's a great feeling,
yes.
I never really aspired that greatly towards anything else in my life other than writing. That was pretty much it. I would have done whatever I was going to do from now on to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that I did get that thing that I've always actually wanted, that was a tremendous feeling.
Has there ever been a time that you've gotten so discouraged you says, I just ain't going to do this no more?
About once a month.
That's just a normal feeling for an author, isn't it?
You know, to me it is. Yeah. Do you feel that way too?
Oh, I think everybody I talk to feels that way. We all get discouraged in every walk of life. I think we all get discouraged.
Oh, I do too. So. Yeah, but for some reason it seems like, you know, I don't know, this is just a highly sought after position.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's any different, any better, or any worse than anything else, but if you want to be an author, there's nothing else that sort of cuts the cake that way for you, you know.
No, there's not, no.
Yeah, so it's easy to get, I mean, within a day's time, encouraged, discouraged, angry, upset, relaxed. It just runs a whole gauntlet here at work.
Okay, you started off with St. Martin. Did you make enough money at that time that you could quit your regular job?
I was about four books in. I did three books with St. Martin's. Well, actually, when I was with St. Martin's, I was doing in the hardback, I was doing for Thomas Dunn, then followed by St. Martin's doing the mass market. But my editor left St. Martin's and went over to Pocketbook. And I went with him because I was just due for a contract. And I got a little bit of a bidding war, which I guess turned out pretty good for me.
Okay.
Pocketbook was willing to pay more, partly because they had gained this new editor. But I went over there and I signed up to do three books with them. And before I even got half of the first novel written, my editor was back at... Thomas Dunn. So I was kind of orphaned over at Pocketbook. They didn't really know me. I didn't really know them.
Yeah.
I did three, I think, really good books for them,
mm-hmm.
but they just didn't really have much going for me. Of course, they did manage to keep some of my books even today, so evidently they weren't harmed by my presence.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as that contract was done, I left there and went to Signet. I've been with Signet ever since. I've been with Signet, I said the other day, 18 years. I think it's closer now to 20.
Okay.
Sometimes I wonder if that might be a record with them because nobody seems to stay there that long. But they've been good to me, and I think we've done well together.
Are you still with Signet today?
I'm with them, but I'm not with them. I'm not under contract with them.
Oh, okay.
And they have pulled back from their Westerns. But I'm doing it right now on my own, and I'm liking the way it's going, so maybe I'll take it to a large publisher, maybe I'll just keep it myself.
You say they're shutting down their Western section. Why do you think that is? It seems a lot of the name publishers are doing that.
I think there's obviously a lot more than to it than what I'm going to express, but it's like anything else. You've got one of the less sellable things. The genre's down. There's no question about that. But because of that, sometimes when you bring people in, editors, staff, nothing against them, but you bring them in, they're young, just out of school, where do they put them? Well, they put them in that smaller department, sort of to see if they're going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, I just don't think, has the expertise to know how to handle that genre. With your editors now, these young guys, and again, I'm not knocking them because I've seen a lot of them go from Westerns, and that's interesting, too. If they're doing pretty good, they won't be in Westerns that long.
Mm.
They'll be into, it's almost a promotion up to some of the other better-selling genres. But they sort of gain their walking legs in Westerns.
Yeah.
I think that means overall the genre does get a certain amount of neglect. There's no big effort to push it. As a result, you wind up with people right out of the Columbia University I use as an example.
Sure.
And they're in there. They're not even familiar with Western terms. So what their interest is in Westerns, I'm not sure.
Well, it's just a job for them is all it is. And like you said, if you don't understand the Western genre, I don't think you should even be trying to edit it. But
there again, a new person coming in, everyone I've ever met has always assured me from day one, Mr. Cotton, I'm going to be your editor. I've always loved Westerns. I've blah, blah, you know, you get all that. But
yeah,
then about
yeah.
2 months in, when they're wondering which way a saddle horn points,
there you
know,
go. Right.
Then you start realizing they were just working towards the job. And I don't blame them, and I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying I think that's a big part of what the problem is with the Western market.
Could very well be, yes. You say you're self-publishing right now. Would you mind walking us through the process of what it was like to be with a big-name publisher compared to being self-published?
The only difference I've seen, and this is pretty much to New York Publishing's credit, I tended to stay more focused with the big houses because I would usually contract 4, 5, 6 books at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And just knowing that every few weeks or months I would have a deadline. I already had that deadline, you know, in the front of my mind, knowing I had to work towards it. That would keep me working in that direction. On some of my work now, I can get started, and I think, well, I'm going to go fishing next week, and I'll pick it up quick after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned over the past year, I've learned that I've got to keep that same level of focus and discipline that I've always had been with the big houses.
Right.
I will. I'll learn to do that because that's what I do for a living. And I'm good at sitting around and assessing where I'm at. And I had to look back and say, well, I'm about 2 books behind what I've ordinarily done in a year's work.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to deal with that. And that's the only thing I can come up with. I kind of get a little lax on my own. With the big houses, you just can't do it because you've been paid. Now you've got to go out there and make it work.
We need to go fishing once in a while, too.
That's true, too. But then again, there's a way to put them both in there. I've leaned more towards the fishing than the deadline.
You write with an outline even today as being self-published?
No, I've never really worked with a firm outline. The way I did contracts with the big houses, it was fairly simple. I would sign to do 4 books,
mm-hmm.
Untitled 1 through Untitled 4.
Okay.
So I walked in with absolutely nothing. They trusted me to give them a Ralph Cotton book. After a few books, they begin to see what my books were. And if they were comfortable with that, I just walked in and gave them 4 Westerns per year. And they never turned one down, so they must have been pretty satisfied.
Not only them, but the readers were also satisfied.
Yeah, those two really play hand in hand.
Yes, they do, yes. Now, you got a contract for 4 books in a year. A lot of people wouldn't be able to understand that. How do you come up with a different story, 4 different stories in this length of time? Some people take 10 years to write one book.
So I learned when I first went with St. Martin's Press, I kind of got into how does this thing work, guys? Give me an idea of what we're looking for, say, 100,000 words or 80,000 words. At that time, I believe it was 80,000.
Okay.
And I began to realize that they were set up to do a book based on so many pages, that's what their cost was going to be to publish it.
Right.
So you want to work within that framework. They say, well, that usually constitutes about 80,000 words, so you want to work in that framework too. Mine came out to be roughly 24 chapters per book, 80,000 words per book, and I needed to fit that all within about 250 pages. Once you've got that in mind, you do it, and through repetition, you learn to work in that framework. The storyline, it's always hard for me to know where those stories come from, but you sit down and you go to work. I don't care whether you're writing books or building houses. You don't put in a few days' work and look back and say, well, I've accomplished absolutely nothing. So you tend to work in a specific direction. I want something to happen to this character, so where do I start he or she from, and what's the first, second, third thing they do? And by the time you get to that third thing, your mind has worked ahead to the fourth, fifth, sixth, whatever. So somehow it just all starts weaving itself.
How much control did you have once you got through with 80,000 words and you turned it over to them? Did you have any control over the editing, the cover, any of that kind of stuff?
My first book, actually my first two books, I had a lot of editing because they didn't know me and I didn't know them. Neither of us really knew what to expect. But after the second book, all I've really had since then has been line editing. They're happy with the story. Once in a while, they may say something, well, why does this character act a certain way? And I said, well, you know, if you read the whole book...
There you go.
Well, that's the only way for that character to act, to fit that story. And if your story's good, nobody can argue with it. Yeah, that works. This person would behave in that manner because that's the way this person works. One reason I've been able to do that four, five, six books a year consistently is because I write in series. I have one series that has 38 books in it. So I know that character.
Mm-hmm.
We get up in the morning and we put on the same size boots. I know what he's going to do, and I don't have to sit around and think about what he's going to do. I can just write a story about him, and it's always the way he acts, what he does in a situation. Is he cool-headed? Does he make all the right moves? And that's a lot easier than sitting down every book and having to put together a character. So that's been very helpful. In fact, I don't know if I could have written 78 standalone novels
okay.
in that time period. So I just pick which series I want to do a book in this time, and boom. I know the characters, we all get together. It's like setting up a movie set or something. And we just take off, and it always works.
You said you write series. Are they continued
yeah.
series, or can I just read one book out of the middle of the series and get a whole story?
It's always been important to me that you can grab any book at any time,
okay.
and I'm not going to leave you hanging as to why you got there or what's going on. It's a little more work to do it, but I can pull that last novel into this novel I'm writing.
Right.
And by the time you finish this novel, you're going to know everything that's gone on in this novel and a pretty good idea of what went on in the last novel, or at least just enough taste of it that hopefully you're going to want to read it too.
Okay, how about the cover design? Did you have any control over that?
I griped about it enough, but by the time I did my second set of books over at Pocketbook, they finally said, well, you know, why don't you just send us a cover and we'll try to get with it. So I give them the best sketch of a cover I could get, and they turned it over to a fellow, and you know, I'm not going to remember his name, but he's a very famous cover designer.
Oh, boy.
For right now, I can't think of his name, but he and I worked on three covers together, the three I did there, and they were much better covers, I think, than the first three. But now that I'm doing my own covers with the lady that works for me, I like them better, to be honest with you. I think the lady that designs my books and covers now, I think she's better than most of the people I know that do that in New York.
Right. Do you have an agent?
No, I haven't had an agent now for, I'd say, after the fifth or sixth book.
When did you start writing?
I've always had something going on. Like I said, I was writing in grade school. But then as I got older, I would find reasons to write certain things. I did some stringer work for the Louisville Courier-Journal in Louisville. I would do some more work here and there, just whatever I could pick up. And then as that grew, I had people who would ask. That was with the Lutheran Church for like 12 years. I had Lutheran ministers sometimes who were a good friend of mine. every once in a while, they'd give me a call on a Friday or Saturday night and say, Ralph, can you do me a favor? I would throw them together a little sermon. So I've written sermons, and everything from sermons to shopping lists. So I've had a lot of experience with all of it. But I started trying to write the novel back in around 69, 70. And I was writing at that time either on a manual typewriter or my best writing I was doing by hand on yellow legal pad. And I put together 14 novels that way.
Goodness.
And my wife following behind, you know, committing them to type. And we had a fire and lost every one of them.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. And at that time, I was getting ready to make my big jump towards publication. But losing that kind of disheartened me for about 6 or 7 years. And during that period of time, I had gone to work in D.C., and they had set me up with a computer. And once I saw that with that computer, I would never lose anything again unless I just... unless I was trying. So I started putting everything on disk and saving it. Then I started really getting serious, and one of the novels I had lost was called The Mud, the Blood, and the Angels. Mm. Probably not the best title I ever had. But anyway, it was a good book. I liked it. Anybody who'd ever read part of it had liked it. But everybody told me, they said, Ralph, if you're going to reconstruct these books that you've lost, it was like 14 that I'd lost, whatever you do, leave the Westerns alone because they don't sell this and that and so forth. So that just kicked it in my mind. Well, in that case, I'm going to do that Western. So that's the direction I took off in, and I rewrote it and changed it from that title to While Angels Dance, and that title seemed to work for everybody. And that was my first published book once I got that rewritten and finished out.
You said everybody you talked to said don't do the Western? And...
Oh, yeah, don't. Yeah, you're wasting your time. People don't buy them. People don't like them. You know the story.
What you're trying to tell me, you're a little bit hard-headed and you're going to do it your way anyhow.
I guess that was pretty much it. But it was a personal story to me, too, because it was written my perception of my grandfather. He happens to be the person that book was written on, and it's written about a horse trader back during the Civil War and how he got hooked up with the James gang and the things that he went through. So it was sort of personal to me. Plus, I liked the story. I could look at other work of mine and think, okay, this might sell better, this one might be that or whatever. But this book, I just liked everything about it, and I've never regretted going that way. It's been a good book. Still is a good book. Okay. When I say good book now, I'm talking, of course, it's still selling.
How do you handle marketing today? Do you have a plan? Do you have a publicist, or are you just taking it one day at a time?
I take it one day at a time. I'm always looking for a plan and looking for what's the next best thing or the best thing in marketing. It's really difficult. For the better or the worse, New York has had such a hold on this industry. I finally got to the point that I realized the one thing that New York has had, and it's the only thing that has kept them in tight control of this industry, has been distribution. If you can't put the books out there the way they do, you just cannot reap the sales that they do. It's got to be dealt with, and I think it is being dealt with slowly over a long period of time. The other thing that New York has, of course, is that advance. Everybody wants that advance, but I try to remind myself that an advance is just what they call it. It's an advance. And whether that book lives or dies, you don't have to pay that advance back if it doesn't make money. But if it does make money, which is what you're trying to do to begin with, that advance is just what it is. It's not a salary. It's not an award of some sort. It's just money that you're going to pay back as that book sells. So if you can afford to not take that advance, the money you make is going to be, in the long run, much greater than that advance was.
What kind of advice would you give to somebody that wants to be an author?
That's a difficult one. It almost feel like you don't really have to give advice to somebody who wants to be an author, because whether they take it or not, they're still going to aspire and eventually probably become an author. I don't know of anybody who ever really sincerely wanted to do the work that didn't eventually get there some way at some level. But I would just say, consistency, and as Hemingway said, right. There's probably a whole lot better, longer explanations, but I think he summed it all up with that.
Can you tell us what you're working on right now?
Right now I'm doing book number 2 in my gun culture series. Okay. It's a crime series, contemporary crime, and it's a little different than most of the crime that's out there. It's down and dirty. Most of it comes right off of the news, which I hear every day here in Florida, and it's pretty gritty stuff.
Explain to us the difference. Well, you've been writing Western so long, though, that they just automatically come. Are you having to work a little bit harder on this crime stuff?
I just have to watch my language, as it were.
Okay.
It's a different voice. I'll sit down and write something, and I'll go back and read it, and I'll think, no, now, wait a minute. These are my guys talking back in 1878, so I've got to change this dialogue a little bit, bring them up to date. Other than that, it writes pretty much the same. I sincerely believe that a lot of what we read and see on TV and that today, I think it just comes from the Western. The Western is the only American genre we have, but it's purely and solely an American-bred genre. And from that, everything that was around before, from Shakespeare till today, everything takes on that format in some way. Hmm. The good guy, the bad guy, the situation, overcoming the odds, one person against a great mass of people. It all goes back to those Westerns that we've pretty much been nurtured on for many years.
You mentioned growing up in the 50s. Did you get to go to the Saturday matinee very much?
Probably not as much as I would like to, but I managed to get my share in,
Okay.
Of course, back in those days, I think, I don't remember what it cost, about a quarter maybe,
right.
But you go there and you'd spend the day there watching two, three, four movies, so yeah, it was good.
If folks wanted to purchase some of your books, how would they go about doing that?
They're at the major bookstores. I'm not hard to find. The only two big major national chains that I'm fully aware of now is Barnes Noble and Books A Million. They both carry my novels. I just pretty much refer people to either the major bookstores or to the online bookstores or the Kindle readers and that.
How can folks get in touch with you? You're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, any other social media?
No, just email ralphcotton@yahoo.com.
Okay.
And that's in all my books too.
We've enjoyed having you on the Wild West Showdown today, and I want to give you a personal invitation to come back and visit anytime you feel like you want to.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
How about Chad Prather's thought for the day?
There are a few challenges that people face when it comes to marriage. I'm currently dealing with sleep deprivation. There are four basic components to my bed. The mattress, the fitted sheet, which no person on the planet knows how to fold neatly except for Martha Stewart. The first layer of covering, which is my soft Egyptian cotton sheets, which I purchased in order to have firmly pressed against my body while I rest and relax. And then there is the blanket, the bedspread, the comforter that we use for warmth. However, I have a fifth component to this equation that messes up the whole thing. I am married to a woman who has the sleeping habits of a caveman. She cares not if the bed is in disarray whenever she gets into it. All she needs is to be horizontal for 30 seconds until the soft little snorts, purrs, and snores come out of her, and that's my politically correct way of saying that this woman sleeps with the demeanor of a freight train. But the worst part of it is she takes her sweet, pretty little pedicured toe and wraps it around into my cotton sheets and then rolls over like a human corkscrew. I did not at any time sign up to sleep with an F5 tornado. I just want to rest, not star in an episode of Storm Chasers. I believe Ricky and Lucy had it right when they used twin beds. My grandparents were married for a long time, 65 happy, successful years, and I'm convinced it was because they slept in separate bedrooms. Did they like each other? I don't know, but they were rested. Listen, people say, Chad, you gotta have the home fires burning. You gotta keep the romance alive. Folks, I got no problem with a conjugal visit every now and then. We can be like two ships passing in the night, and great is the collision. But I just wanna go to sleep. Things change after you get married. We've been together enough years. Trust me, we just need to rest. My wife used to wanna come to bed in a pretty little negligee and matching lingerie. Now she don't even care if the flannel pajamas she's wearing have matching plaid. This is the way it is. Baby, don't want you just want to snuggle? Hell no! I'm going to die after this one. In fact, I'll probably just lay the seat back right here in the truck and go to sleep. We've affectionately called the doghouse the man cave. I'll be there tonight. Love y'all. God bless. Facebook poke.
As I said at the beginning of the show, today's show was a little different. But we felt here on the Wild West Showdown that folks want to hear from someone like Ralph Cotton. We also felt that there are a lot of authors out there that want to do the same thing Ralph has been doing. They want to make enough money from their writing to quit punching that dreaded clock every day. Of course, everybody's not going to be able to do that, but some will be able to. If you happen to be one that isn't able to do that, please don't let it discourage you. I've said this quite often, but I think it bears repeating. Don't write to be rich and famous, or to even make your living writing. Write because it's something you can't not do. Write because it makes you feel good. Write for your own personal satisfaction. Remember what Mr. Cotton said? If you're an author, there's really no way you can't write. How about some cowboy wisdom? If it ain't yours, don't touch it. Before we end the show today, I want to wish my beautiful bride a happy birthday. Of course, I ain't going to tell you her age because in my eyes, she's still the lovely bride I married some 57 years ago. Happy birthday, darling. This is the old cowboy saying adios and happy trails.
Come on back next week to the Wild West Showdown with the old cowboy J.C. Holsey.